Chris and Drew. Sam, too, here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter if you want to communicate at any point throughout the show. And go by TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. There's a lot of great posts available on the Justice and Drew page, including a place where you can go and vote on your favorite parody song contest of the year.
We've compiled all the snippets. Not all of them.
Again, you did.
Yeah.
to get credit where credit is due.
Like 16 or so. I'm trying to pull up the poll right now to see what's in the lead. Last time I looked, it was Al's Coppin' a Feeling was winning the parody song contest. And whichever one everybody votes on, we're going to make a full-length version. And we'll come back in 2018 on our first show and we'll play it.
And maybe make it into a musical, we decided earlier.
A full stage production.
Or we'll just do it. We'll go and do it live.
I don't want to be a part of your weird Al Franken musical.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, go vote for something else.
Yeah, please do. Please go to the Justice and Drew Show page and vote for something.
Yeah, Leanne Tweeden didn't want to be either. ABC News. U.S. health officials are planning to crack down on a growing number of unproven alternative remedies, focusing on products containing dangerous ingredients that have occasionally been linked to serious injury and death. So the FDA yesterday issued a new proposal for regulating homeopathic medicines that have long been on the fringe of mainstream medicine. Under the government's framework, the vast majority of low-risk products would remain on the market. So popular homeopathic brands like Zicam Allergy Relief and Cold Easy would still be available.
Sure. And they should be.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not one to lobby for the FDA to start cracking down and taking these things off the market. And I don't know that increased regulations are really going to be a great benefit or anything. What I think needs to happen is people just need to be more educated. You know, these products market themselves in a way that is a lot of times inauthentic,
right?
Disingenuous, and sometimes outright lying. About the benefits of a lot of these products. You know, a lot of them are just simple vitamins that you should be taking anyway. But they're marketed in such a way that they're actually going to prevent or cure some symptoms or some illnesses or some conditions when they don't. And they, you know, that needs to be exposed.
Well, and without getting into what works and what doesn't work, and this would never be a marketing strategy for any of the ones that'll stay on the market, like Cold Easy or Zicam Allergy Relief, I am of the opinion that there is something to be said about if these products are, you know, and obviously the federal government's going to let them stay on the shelves. They're believing they are. But if they are generally safe, okay, but maybe perhaps don't offer a ton of benefit, there's something very powerful about the power of suggestion. And I think there's a lot of good that comes out of some of these medicines, even if they aren't scientifically sound to actually do what they say they do. For the people that do take them, and sometimes even myself, the thought that you're taking something that is going to go and help you or keep you from, say, getting a cold is a very powerful thing. And that power of positive energy. And I hate to be like, oh, ooh, about it, but it's true. It's absolutely true. And I think that's an important aspect of it.
It's true that you believe it.
Right. It's true.
It's true that you believe
it. The power of positive thought and suggestion, you know, if it helps to take a Zicam to increase that, then I'm down with it.
Look, it doesn't hurt.
A placebo is what, basically what I'm saying. Yeah, it's basically what I'm describing.
It is. And
right.
There can be some placebo effects, and a lot of people sort of convince themselves into being sick.
Right.
Or at least convince themselves that they are sicker than they actually are, and they let it affect them more than it needs to. That's very common. And if spending money on a placebo helps that, I'm not going to sit here and tell you not to, or that you can't, or that you shouldn't. I may judge you. For it.
That should not judge. True. Once a niche market, homeopathic products have grown into a $3 billion industry, according to the FDA figures, similar to dietary supplements, in that the FDA does not review their safety and effectiveness before they're sold. But unlike supplements, homeopathic medicines can state that they are intended for specific medical symptoms and conditions similar to drugs. A handful of products in recent years have been subject to major safety problems, usually involving potentially toxic ingredients. Yeah. Last year, the FDA warned consumers about the marketing of Highland's homeopathic after they were tied to seizures and deaths in infants and children.
I don't understand why people just don't trust their doctors. Like, I don't get this idea that, you know, there's this whole nefarious medical industry that's out to get you,
right,
and out to feed you false information, and you have to go to all these websites and natural news websites and buy all these things that, because that's the truth. It's like, just trust your doctor. Your doctor went to medical school and learned a lot and made a lot of personal sacrifices to get to where they are because they want to help people,
yeah,
and they want to help you and they want to help you get better. And, you know, if you have questions, if you're concerned about something, go to your doctor and talk to them and trust them.
Well,
the doctors aren't out there looking to lie to you.
And that really does, that opens the door for the further discussion of what do we do about healthcare moving forward and lowering the costs. And getting back to the continued frustration that I have with my stupid ankle that I sprained, the big motivating...
You rubbed some oil? No. Holding it above like a diffuser for an hour, maybe?
My point... Actually, I do have one for you that I'll share here in a moment, and I think it actually made me sick, but I'll... One second. So, my point being is that, to your point of going to see the doctor... One of the biggest reasons why I didn't go for my ankle was because I was assuming, and I was right, but it was in bad shape. You saw what zombie foot looked like. I was assuming, based off of what I had read online, that I didn't break it. It was a bad sprain, but it was hurting really bad. The main factor why I didn't go, because I didn't want to drop the money.
Sure.
I'm like, I don't want to go and have to drop the $75 or $100 to have the doctor tell me what I already think I know. But eventually I did, and I'm glad that I did, and... Kudos to that urgent care doctor who saw me, who didn't go and x-ray my foot.
Right.
Who said, I'm going to advise not to do that. And I knew exactly why he was doing that. That doesn't happen very often. I mean, I trust a lot
Saving
of doctors.
You some money.
It was great. And so it would be amazing if in the country we were able to kick open those doors so you had those options like the Minute Clinics at the CVS, you know, and the Walgreens, where people can go and drop a modicum amount of money to go and check out what their symptoms are for that peace of mind.
Right, right.
Rather than taking a placebo.
I would like to see some, I don't know, I don't want to advocate for more regulation, but I would like to see some efforts made to educate people more about the billion-dollar industry that is a bunch of fake homeopathy nonsense.
Right.
I'm not discounting all of it across the board, but there is a lot of money being made by lying to people about what these products can do or have the potential to do. And that's where I would like to see more efforts made to really educate people.
I'm going to tell you this real quick story, and I'm just going to let everybody know up front, Sam, Drew, you feel free to mock. When I got I had a hematoma, which is essentially a blood clot, yeah, in my side, between my two open heart surgeries because I'm on blood thinners. Don't know how I got it. And it was about the size of, remember those little plastic footballs you get as a kid? It was about that size. There was a guy, a listener to the show, who was really into the homeopathic stuff. And he was convinced, you ready?
Right.
That if I took a laser pointer to the area on my body where the hematoma was, because you could see the lump.
Did he have one to sell you?
That the no, I already had one at home because I already had a laser pointer. If you just did that, and if you just spent time pointing the laser pointer across it, that the radiation,
yeah,
the nominal amount of radiation from the laser pointer would go and break up and help break down that blood that was collected. I tried it for weeks. I sat on the couch.
I'm judging you so hard.
I sat on the couch with my shirt up with a laser pointer, just moving it back and forth for hours on end. The sad thing is,
I'm judging you so hard.
It got infected. It got infected to where I had to have it surgically removed.
Right.
There's a part of me that I wonder if I gave myself radiation poisoning.
I don't think so.
Because it gives off a very nominal amount of...
I don't think that happened.
It might have happened. Yeah, I know. I was dumb. I fully admit it. You may judge me.
I am. 651-989-5855. Coming up, we're going to talk to the soon-to-be, maybe, possibly, if Al Franken does indeed resign, soon-to-be Lieutenant Governor Senator Michelle Fischbach joins the show next. Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk. AM 1130. 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew along with Sam. How many days do we have left on vacation?
Two more.
Can't come fast enough.
Two more. We'll be off on Friday. Brian McDaniel and Nick Zerwas and Brian Miller and Mike Franklin will be in on Friday morning for the roundtable. And then we'll be off next week with a combination of some best of, some special holiday programming, and Brian McDaniel sitting in with some guest hosts as well next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then we'll be back on January 2nd.
We have a story a little bit later on in the hour out of WTVA. Al Franken's chances of unresigning, some individuals close to him say, it's pretty much zero.
Yeah. Joining us now, the soon-to-be lieutenant governor, if Al Franken does indeed follow through on his plans to resign, Senator Michelle Fischbach. Good morning, Senator. Thank you for taking some time and joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. Start off with really the big story that's been around you and your eventual ascension is your stated intent to continue to serve both as a senator, to not give up your Senate seat, and serve in the capacity of lieutenant governor. Is that still in your plans? And what sort of feedback are you getting on that?
Well, that is still my plan. I think that we're standing on good constitutional ground when there's a court case that did decide it. Yeah, the court case is from 1898, but, case law doesn't expire. Supreme Court decisions don't expire.
True.
And so this is still, they found that a senator could serve as both senator and lieutenant governor. And, you know, this is a short term. This is a year, if not a little less than a year, that I would be lieutenant governor. Two other people have done this. Senator Charles Adams and Senator William Richardson have both done this. It was like 1929, and Richardson, I believe, was in 1936. So there's precedent and there's case law, and it's a temporary position. No constitutional powers provided to the lieutenant governor. There's four boards that you statutorily sit on, but I think those would, a couple of meetings a year. Probably maybe more, but a few meetings a year. And so I think that this is a solution to taking care of, making sure that I can retain my Senate seats with that I was just elected to 4-year terms. The people of Senate District 13 elected me, and I have an obligation.
Were you surprised that this ended up becoming an issue, or was it kind of expected that this was going to be a point of contention?
Well, I mean, I believe we're on solid ground, but I always assume that there's going to be someone who doesn't support what you do. It's politics.
Right. Tom Buck. Right. Right. At what point did you see this whole scenario playing out with the when it comes to the allegations against Franken? Was it a matter of when the initial reports came out that perhaps people began discussing, well, if this ends up going this way, this will happen? Or was there a moment where people finally said, okay, this is probably going to happen? At what point did you realize this could become a reality?
I actually, for me, and maybe others were a little, had a little better, idea of what was going to happen. But for me, it was actually when he actually made the announcement that he would appoint Lieutenant Governor Smith. I mean, we had been speculating. Everybody had been speculating because I think that Franken's resignation, although probably 24 hours, we were all thinking, oh, he's going to do it. And then he did that. And there was kind of that initial announcement. So we started thinking about it. But then when the thought that, it would be Lieutenant Governor Smith, because really a U.S. Senate resignation doesn't generally affect the president of the Senate.
Right.
If we just go on our way and you think whatever you think about it. But the domino effect with then appointing Lieutenant Governor Smith, that's when it became a reality, and we had to address what was going on.
Well, and that would make sense, too, because there was, there was a lot of talk of Tina Smith, but at the same time, there was a lot of talk of other people as well, and it was kind of a coin toss as to what Governor Mark Dayton was going to do.
Yeah.
there's been some chatter that they might call a special session and agree to a new Senate president of Governor Dayton's choosing, a DFLer. And then when Al Franken resigns and the ascensions all happen, that person would then go on to be lieutenant governor. And then the Senate would re-elect the Senate president again, you know, just sort of an agreement with Dayton to get him a lieutenant governor of his own party and of his own choosing. To the best of your knowledge, have those discussions happened on any serious level at all, or is this just chatter from media and punditry of, well, this could happen?
Well, you know, Senator Gazelka would be dealing with that as the majority leader, so I know that he is very interested in doing that. I think that, honestly, it is probably, it sounds a little more complicated, but I think it's actually the cleanest solution. We go in, we elect, they ascend, and then I come back and we re-elect. I'm hoping that it would be me to be re-elected as president. But I think that is the cleanest, you know, that would be the cleanest way.
So you would be okay with that? If that was the course of action that was decided, that would be fine with you?
Yes, yeah. Oh, okay. And then there would be, if then the governor would have a DFL LG and, you know, things like that. I think that it is the cleanest way. I think that there's pushback from the DFL, obviously, because the balance of power of the Senate is in play here.
Sure.
And so I think that there's pushback from the DFL, and they're not necessarily willing to go that route. But if they have an issue, if they have a concern about me, you know, being in both roles, that to me would be a solution that they could support then. But I can't tell you if Senator Gazelka has been talking about it. I know publicly he has been. I don't know if there's been behind the scenes discussion.
If that doesn't happen and things go as they stand right now, and you ascend to the lieutenant governor position and continue to hold your Senate seat, how do you envision what do you envision your role as lieutenant governor being? What role are you going to play in the Dayton administration as a Republican lieutenant governor who, you know, to be fair, probably isn't on board with a whole bunch of Dayton's agenda?
Well, and I think, you know, the governor and I did have lunch the other day, and I think we agreed to disagree because we both know that there are not a whole lot of issues that we're going to see eye to eye on. I think that's pretty well established. But the powers of the lieutenant governor are all delegated from the governor. So all of the things that you saw Tina Smith doing, with the exception of four statutory boards, I wrote just for that caveat, but everything else is delegated by the governor. So it's up to the governor. I mean, as pleasant as our lunch was, I don't see him having me doing a whole lot of things with huge responsibility.
So, yeah, it goes back to, you know, I don't see logistically any problem with you holding both seats. I really don't. You're right. The governor is not going to cede a whole lot of responsibilities to you. He's not going to send you to the legislature to handle the negotiations on behalf of the administration like he did with Tina Smith. Somebody else is going to have to fill that role. Governor Dayton himself, maybe. But all that being said, considering it is just a statutory office, a statutory position, and you're going to serve on a few boards, doesn't feel like there would be a whole lot of conflict with your duties and roles as a senator or any reason why you couldn't do both.
I absolutely agree. I think that, the time, you know, we're in a short session. We need to remember this is only a year. It's barely a year that I would be serving as lieutenant governor, and we're in session only a few months out of that year. You know, we don't start till February. We go until May. So if that would be the only time that my schedule would be more bound to St. Paul, and I think that's not even an issue. You know, there is some flexibility there. So there isn't anything, I don't think, that would keep me from doing them both.
One more question, and I apologize because it is an awkward question, but it has been asked to me by a number of listeners. Would you be drawing both the senatorial salary and the lieutenant governor salary?
Well, and I'm looking into that because I just met with the governor's operations department manager yesterday, and they say they're claiming that I statutorily have to. And I was that was not my intent to draw both salaries. So I'm going to actually I was going to send them an email today asking them to clarify that and how that how I am required to take a salary from the governor's office. So I'm going to find out about that, but that is not my intent.
Okay.
So we will see what they're saying the law requires me to do. So
well, and Senator Michelle Fischbach, thank you so much for taking some time out this morning and joining us. I just had one quick one. I know Drew was mentioning listeners were asking, and I've had several listeners ask me as well. Have you heard from Governor Mark Dayton on whether or not he did go and devour your homemade banana bread?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, that's what I'd like to know. I'm just...
And we're waiting for our loaf as well.
Thank you so much for the time this morning, and we'll certainly be keeping an eye on everything, and I hope you have a great Merry Christmas, great holidays.
Well, thank you very much. And you guys have a great vacation. You're looking forward to that, I can tell.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Very much, very much. Thank you so much, Senator. Really appreciate it.
Coming up, out of the Star Tribune, we didn't get a chance to get to this yesterday, but it needs its due attention. It's very important because there's tough work ahead for Tina Smith.
Oh,
on the Hill.
So much hard work.
And at home.
Oh, but if anybody's up for it.
Yes.
It's our gal, Tina.
Absolutely.
Justice.
+651 989-5855 is the phone number or the hashtag to use on Twitter. You want to communicate with the show at any time is TCNT. Welcome back to your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew. Looking forward to chatting with Representative Jason Lewis in just about 30 minutes.
Going to talk a little bit about the reciprocity bill, which he was in support of. Tax reform. We're going to get into that with Jason Lewis as well. And Pete Hegseth coming up. Just after 8:30, I'm looking forward to that conversation too, because there's a bunch of elaborate protests that are being planned over something that probably is not going to happen.
Right? They're ready though. So they are ready. Drop of a dime, they are ready to protest.
So stupid.
They are constantly on the verge of a protest.
Yeah, they're talking about Trump and when/if he fires Mueller, and they're planning. They're going to have protests planned. For something that he says he's not going to do. Okay.
But people think he might, John.
Oh, boy, they want him to.
People really think he might.
Yeah, for a group of people that apparently don't want to see Robert Mueller get fired because he's investigating Russia collusion, they sure do want to see Mueller get fired.
They are, yeah. I think they are. They would rather him get fired.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, look, if there was legitimate pre-election Russian collusion, you know, that the Trump campaign was in on and that tipped the scales, probably would have found out about it by now.
It's gotten so ridiculous.
Because we haven't. They just want him to fire Mueller so that then they have something.
There's a story that Jill Stein is being looked at by the investigator. Jill Stein is being looked at for Russia. Somebody had to have done this. Somebody. Anybody. All right. So that's coming up next hour. Right now, though, Star Tribune. Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith's political connections and savvy.
She's such a hero.
Quickly united Minnesota's ideologically and geographically diverse DFL party behind her as Al Franken's replacement in the U.S. Senate. What? What? What?
Yeah. Christmas came early for the Star Tribune here.
Wow. Yeah. Ideologically and geographically diverse DFL? What?
Ideologically diverse? What?
The day it became clear that continuing allegations of improper conduct toward women would force Franken to resign, Governor Mark Dayton and his party faced an urgent challenge, picking a credible candidate and avoiding a grueling intra-party battle in the 2018 special election.
The language that they choose in this article, the adjectives that they choose to describe this whole process just shows you how much fawning you can expect over Senator Tina Smith over the next year, over the next, you know, a couple of years, honestly. I mean, they are so enamored with her. And the fact that we've got, John, we've got two female senators. And their names are Tina and Amy. You know who else is named Tina and Amy? Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. And we love them, too. And it's like we've got our own little Tina Fey and Amy Poehler in the Senate. And maybe Tina Fey and Amy Poehler will come to Minnesota now. This is all going to be so exciting. They're so happy. This is just all great. Tina and Amy.
So stupid. Those memes that popped up with the two of them. I was like, what? What? No, I get it. Yeah, that's your ideologically and geographically diverse DFL. You know, we asked the question a couple of weeks ago when there was the news of one of the royals getting engaged again. It's like, why do people care about the royals so much? Right? I don't think it's a matter of caring about the royals so much. I think it's stuff like this. This is like their version of the royals,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it really is.
It was a situation that required a steady hand and a deep well of relationships across the spectrum from business allies to labor leaders to progressive activists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If there's one person,
thank goodness we've got such a thoughtful governor leading the charge.
If there's one person that I can think of as a person who can clean up a big mess, it's Tina, said Javier, president of the SEIU Local 26, who called Smith an old friend. Haven't we established that that position doesn't really do? I mean, didn't we just had
lieutenant governor?
Yeah, yeah. We just had Michelle Fishbach on the show and said that it don't do a whole.
Well,
it
does what the governor wants it to do.
Yeah,
you know, its duties are prescribed by whoever is the governor at the time, and Governor Dayton, because he likes to spend his time coloring and eating goldfish.
Come on, let's be honest. It's watercolor
out of his favorite bowl. He prescribed a lot of responsibilities to Tina Smith. I mean, the joke was and has been for the last few years that she's really the governor behind the scenes, and there may be some truth to that.
Apparently, I have something in common with Governor Mark Dayton. I had a bowl of goldfish crackers yesterday. They were tasty. Now, as the established DFL power player heads for the scrutiny of a multi-million dollar statewide campaign, Minnesota Republicans will try to mount an appeal to voters who have recently seemed wary of establishment ties. There's that liberal Minneapolis elite image she's going to have a tough time shedding, said Mark Drake of Smith, a one-time political aide to former U.S. Senator Norm Coleman. Drake now operates his own public affairs firm. Originally, it was inferred. It was clear she was not going to run, Coleman said, in a reference to the initial belief, never confirmed by the Dayton administration, that Smith would merely hold the seat through the November 2018 special election.
Right. And that was the reason I didn't think it was going to be Smith, because
right.
I didn't think she wanted to run. I didn't think she was planning on running, and I thought that the priority would be, I was right about that part at least, the priority would be selecting someone who would run for re-election for the seat immediately.
You're actually right about more than that, because this says here, Coleman said the very first thing she did was take orders from Chuck Schumer.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
She's really making all these decisions.
Right?
Yeah. It ain't Dayton.
Nope. Dayton acknowledged discussing the appointment with Schumer, but said the decision was his alone. What is clear is the exhaustive effort under heavy time pressure that Dayton and Smith aides and the DFLers undertook in the week between Franken's resignation and Dayton's announcement.
Honestly, there was no time pressure, because Franken hasn't even told us when he's going to resign yet.
They could still not have made an announcement yet.
Right. It'd be fine. We'd all be speculating. We'd all be wondering.
Sure.
We'd all want an announcement. But there was no sort of deadline or anything that had to be met in order to make this announcement. They could have just waited until he actually submitted his resignation and found out when he was going to resign.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Further in the article, it does say the reason why there was time pressure. Dayton wanted to take a nap. Okay, I added that part. They did place hundreds of calls, they say, to allies in Minnesota and across the country. According to a person with direct knowledge of the effort, they sought advice, gamed out scenarios, then locked down support for Dayton's pick and orchestrated the rollout. I would like to know, and we probably never will, I would like to know what those conversations were like. Because if it did go the other way, if it was Tina Smith saying, fine, you know what, I'll do this, but I want the full backing because I do want to run. I wonder how contingent the decision was for that to happen, and how much of it was she needed to kind of be pushed along. Because there wasn't any talk prior to this of what her plans, her future plans were going to be.
Right. Well, right? Everybody assumed she was going to run for governor. That was the assumption that nearly everybody made, that she was the governor in waiting. You know, she was doing a lot of the duties for the Dayton administration anyway, especially in terms of relationships and negotiating with the legislature. And that once Dayton announced that he would not be running for reelection, that Tina Smith would sort of be the anointed one. And when she announced that she was not planning on running for governor, I think a lot of people assumed that she was just going to continue to be the political insider. Yeah. She was going to be the person behind the scenes. She didn't necessarily want to run for office. Clearly now that we know she's all in on at least one Senate run in 2018, if not two, you know,
yeah.
but at least one Senate run in 2018. And while a lot of the criticisms of her are certainly fair, and it'll be interesting to see how real this phenomenon of, you know, rejecting political insiders is, especially on the left. She's going to be a tough opponent. The Republicans are going to have to put up a really strong candidate against her in 2018.
Well, and it's not even just going to be because of who she is, her name recognition, and you know how the party politics play in the state. It's also going to be because of this, because of articles like this, because of the power of the media, and how already you have, you know, this is not an editorial. I mean, this is just a regular article talking about this particular story, but you can't help but see how she is already being portrayed. And she's going to, you know, across the board, when it comes to print media and television media, she's going to be propped up. It's going to be, like we said, like a royal.
Mm-hmm.
It already is happening that way. I mean, look, Ken Martin's playing into it as well. Not a big surprise. I don't know many people who don't like Tina, which is a remarkable feat in politics. I don't particularly like Tina.
You don't know her, though.
I know enough. I don't like the fact that there's an individual here who I don't know Tina personally to say whether or not I like her as a person. I can say that I don't like the way that she has risen to prominence. I am not a fan of that at all, especially when you're
she's never run.
Right.
She's never won an election.
Right.
And I don't count running as, you know, on the governor's ticket. Nobody was voting for Tina Smith in that election. So I discount that.
Right.
Although that, you know, the media is quick to put that on her resume. So she's won one election already. No, she didn't.
No, that's not how that works.
She's been appointed. She's been appointed to every job that she's had. And
right.
She's risen through the ranks through relationships and appointments.
And what I don't like is that she's being handed this seat that normally people have to go and work really, especially a seat like this, have to go and work really, really hard for, and not just work really, really hard for, that's not to say she hasn't done hard work, but has to go and win the votes of people. And that's what, and now...
That's not her fault, though. That's not her fault.
Well,
I mean, the circumstances around which, you know, this seat became open, and the Constitution dictates that this is a position that has to be appointed by the governor. So
sure.
I'm not going to hold that against her, but it is just another step in a long line of steps of simply rising through the ranks and gaining power and influence via appointments.
Right, right. And that's not a matter of holding it against her. I don't like this position. I don't like the fact that she has, and I don't like necessarily the fact that she's taken this position. I'd like to believe that somebody would have a little bit more respect for that, but, you know, kind of neither here nor there. But she is being handed a position that people normally have to have a large group of individuals go and vote for them to put them in that spot. And not only that, but she's already going to have the complete advantage of being placed in the spot and then having all of this support when she never, in my opinion, really earned it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I don't like.
I don't think that's unfair at all.
What's yet to be seen is whether Republicans will be able to make this history, and it goes back to how she's brought up what we were just talking about, a liability. It's another political insider who will raise taxes on middle-class families, said John Rouleau, executive director of the Republican-aligned Minnesota Jobs Coalition. As Republicans mount their critique of Smith, the party must also recruit on its own a candidate to run against her.
And that's going to be the challenge. If it's not Tim Pawlenty...
Yeah.
It's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough fight. Pawlenty's been heavily recruited, and a lot of people, a lot of Washington, you know, power brokers and insiders are trying to convince Pawlenty to run. I'm hearing Pawlenty's kind of still keeping an eye on the potential of running for governor again.
Right.
And he's more interested in that than he is running for senator.
Which makes sense.
But
that makes more sense to me.
He's already been governor. And
right.
I don't hear a lot of people pining for the days of Pawlenty as governor. Oh, I wish he was back. That's, man, I want Tim Pawlenty back in St. Paul. I think this would be a better move for Pawlenty if he is really interested in throwing his hat back in the political arena. I think this is a better move than running for governor, and certainly would have the best chance of beating Tina Smith than anybody I can particularly think of at this moment.
Let's go and talk with John. Good morning, John. Welcome to Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talks. What is your thoughts on Tina Smith?
Yeah, good morning. Well, I don't know. I'm just, I'm looking at the cup here, and I'm trying to decide whether it's half full or half empty.
And, yeah, so are we.
And, no, because, I mean, I can think of people that they would appoint to that I would, you know, Keith Ellison, that I would not care to see in
sure.
that.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
I mean, that's, you know, but then I go back the other way, and yeah, maybe she's formidable because she's just, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know about her.
We don't know. My hunch is if she has decided to go all in on being a politician and running for office, my hunch is she's going to be very tough to beat. My hunch is she's going to work really hard. She's going to get a ton of fawning, adoration type coverage from the media. It's going to be tough to ding her on things. Not much is going to stick to her.
I agree. I mean, the Star Tribune put some campaign literature on my porch this morning. So it's starting kind of early here.
Right, of course.
It could be, but then the blessing there again is that half full or half empty. She's got to run for election then in 2020, and quite frankly, you know, I'm not sure how they're going to do on that.
I'm not either. Nobody is, because she's never done it.
Yeah.
Well, no. Well, and there's the greater thing too, and that's the national picture. I mean, if the economy is going great and this and that and the other. I mean, why would you vote for a Democrat in there, you know, if this tax reform works out the way it is and so forth? I don't, you know, maybe it's going to be more like a Trump thing, you know, a Trump-Hillary thing, but maybe not. I don't know. It's a real toss-up.
Thanks for your call, John. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, and I'll pull back on my frustration a little bit. If anybody else in Tina Smith's position would probably go and take advantage of it, and I understand that. My frustration comes from the view that I don't like seeing when people are just handed things, especially big positions like this, without having to earn it. And I get it. Most people probably would, in her position, go and take advantage of it. So it's not necessarily on her. I just find the whole circumstance, top to bottom, is gross and unfortunate when you look at how we got here in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you start off at a negative, you know, everything else kind of moving forward
ends up kind of becoming a negative. It's just gross on top of gross.
Yeah, exactly.
On top of gross. 651-989-5855. Joining us next, friend of the show, been a while since we've had him on, Representative Jason Lewis. We're going to be talking tax reform with him. We're going to be talking about the reciprocity bill that he was considering as well.
Yeah.
All that and more coming up. Twin Cities News Talk. Justice.